I Eat Green with Bhavani, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another beautiful Wednesday. I am Bhavani, and you're listening to I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm very excited today. I have a wonderful guest with me, Dr. Susan Rubin, who is one of the two angry moms in the documentary, Two Angry Moms. And she is also a holistic nutritionist and founder of Better School Food. And so she'll be with me later on in the show. And I'm really excited to introduce what she's doing with all of you. And I also wanted to tell you what's been going on in the garden. As you, I'm sure, have guessed, it's November, I'm trying to put my garden a little bit to sleep. At the same time, trying to think ahead into the spring as to what I might want popping up in March. So trying to get that in the ground. I actually planted my garlic a few weeks ago with my Girl Scouts, or the Girl Scouts that came by. And just yesterday I was out there with my interns putting some straw on top of the garlic to insulate it for the winter. And we were also cleaning up all the, tomatoes that were now dead and needed to be pulled out, and pulling out some of the other things. I still have, believe it or not, rainbow chard growing. I still have my collard greens growing. I still have arugula. I still have mizuna greens, which are baby mustard greens. Delicious. They're my favorite. What else do I still have going? And I still have my broccoli flowering. You know, I took out the main heads, of course. Once you pull the main heads out earlier in the season, the broccoli keeps sprouting little shoots that look like broccolini, and they're delicious, so sweet. And so I, every day, I go out there and I get another bag of broccoli. So I'm still eating from my garden and loving it, and cleaning it up, and it's looking much better now that I pulled out all those dead tomato plants and the dead mums that were all over the place. I don't mean mums. I mean, what do I mean? Marigolds. That's what I mean. So anyway, I have a couple of things I want to share with you that are coming up this week. First, tonight, if anyone is in New York, this happens to be the Green Market Grain Week. And so tonight there's the New School, the Educated Eater. There's a panel discussion, and that's at the New School at 65 West 11th Street, if anyone is around, from 6 to 8 and is interested in going. And then this Saturday, as part of the Green Market Grain Week, there is a demonstration from Bread from the Earth, and that is at 2 p.m. in the Brooklyn Kitchen. For more information, if you're interested, it's www.grownnyc.org/greenmarket. And you'll be able to find it on that website, and it should be really a great time. I would be going, except that this is my weekend for cooking for the homeless. So I have a gathering of lots of community people coming to my place to cook for the homeless. And we feed about 400 people in Rufus King Park the Tuesday before Thanksgiving every year. And it's wonderful. You know, people donate turkeys, people donate cooked turkeys. I gather from lots of community local vendors, donations of potatoes and sweet potatoes, and it's a real coming together of so many community people that just want to help in their way. So we have a cook-in, basically, all weekend long. So that's really fun. Then coming up Thanksgiving weekend, Slow Food Huntington is sponsoring a Honeybee Day. And it's a full-day activity starting at 2 o'clock in the afternoon at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington. We are starting the day off with showing a movie called Colony, and it's about the collapse of the bee colonies. So that should be really interesting. And then it's followed by a beekeeper there, question and answer time, and some other people selling bee pollen products, and followed by a mead tasting. So if anyone is local in the area, that's in Huntington at the Cinema Arts Center. Then for those of you that have been following me talking about Terra Madre and Slow Food, Slow Food USA has declared December 10th Terra Madre Day in America. So in honor of Terra Madre Day, the chapter that I co-chair, Slow Food Huntington, is having a Terra Madre Day at the Cinema Arts Center, where we will show a short video of Terra Madre and what goes on there, as well as a slide presentation of slides that we took while we were there, and you will be able to talk to the three delegates from our chapter that went there. And we're also going to be having a potluck in music, so come on down to the Cinema Arts Center on December 10th for a fun day. And in honor of Terra Madre Day also, Sustainable Long Island is throwing a big event, a really wonderful, wonderful fundraising event to help support their farmers' youth markets that they've been responsible for getting going this year. And so it's a fundraiser at Ohika Castle. And if you have not been to Ohika Castle before, it's a big, beautiful place in Cold Spring Harbor on Long Island. And I believe Dietrich Dieter's getting, or is that his name? The baseball guy. Derek Jeter is getting married there if he hasn't already. And it's a, you know, wonderful, beautiful space. And so that's on December 20th, and they will be actually honoring Ann Rathkoff and myself as Slow Food Huntington chapter leaders, as well as Joseph Gergella III for his accomplishments as executive director of the Long Island Farm Bureau. So that's Monday, December 20th from 5 to 7, cocktail reception. And for further information, you can email Sustainable Long Island at J Cipriano, which is C-I-P-R-I-A-N-O, at sustainableli.org. I know that's all a lot of information. So I do want to share my recipe with you. But there's actually one more announcement. There's also, again, if you're local, and I realize many of my listeners aren't local, so I'm sorry for those of you that are not local, because you can't get here. But if you have any information, you know, where you are located and you'd like me to share that with your area, please send me the information. My email, as you probably know, is bhavani@ieatgreen.com. But this week, also on Sunday, there is a turkey-free Thanksgiving dinner and lecture sponsored by Healthy Planet. And for more information with that, you can do info@healthy-planet.org. And it's a turkey-free Thanksgiving. Everyone is welcome, and it starts at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So maybe I'll see you there. I am one of the food tasters. So if you bring a dish to share, there's a little contest that goes along with that. So I will be there. And my recipe for today that I'd like to share with you is a butternut squash soup. You know, this season, you know, is as it starts getting colder, we all think about soups. And, of course, butternut squash is in every market right now. It's really in season. So, and these are great for all winter long. So to make a butternut squash soup, you want to have olive oil, one onion, three carrots, three butternut squash, 2 teaspoons chopped garlic, 3 tablespoons grated ginger, 1 tablespoon of better than bouillon, which is basically, it's kind of like a paste that makes a vegetable broth. So you can use some vegetable broth as part of your 12 cups of water later on in the recipe if you don't have this better than bouillon. But someone turned me on to it, and I've been liking it. So it's in this recipe. 2 teaspoons salt, two sprigs of thyme, one can of coconut milk. I choose to use the light coconut milk. You can do whichever you prefer. 1/4 cup of maple syrup, which is optional, depending on how sweet you like your pumpkin squash soup. 1/2 teaspoon of Chinese five spice. And Chinese five spice is kind of a blend of spices. If you don't have that, you can use allspice, you can use nutmeg, you can use ginger, and throw those in, and that will kind of give you the same feeling. And 12 cups of water. And so I buy the butternut squash, and I deal with cutting it up. But in many places now, you can actually buy butternut squash already cut up for you. I know Trader Joe's sells it that way, and probably Whole Foods as well. So the one catch is you do want to try to find organic, if possible, in everything that I, all the recipes that I use. I want you to try to find organic, if possible. So that we're supporting our local farmers and helping the environment. So you want to sauté in 2 tablespoons of olive oil the onion, which you would chop up. The carrots you want to chop up also. The squash, the garlic, and the ginger. And just sauté it for about 5 to 7 minutes until everything starts getting soft. Or at least the onions will start, and carrots will start getting soft. The squash will not get soft in 5 to 7 minutes. That takes a long time to cook. But you just want to, by sautéing the vegetables first, it just adds to the flavor and makes them a little sweeter when you're making the broth. Then you add the water, bring it to a boil, reduce the heat to a simmer. You can add the salt, the bouillon, and the thyme, and let it cook down for about 30 minutes. And then you can puree the soup. Now, I use a Braun pureeing stick. It's a blender that's on a stick, and it's great. You just put the whole stick right into the pot and zip it, and it just blends it up. Before I had that, I used to actually, take a strainer and take all the ingredients and put them into the food processor and blend it up batch by batch, and that does work. And I really shouldn't complain. There used to not be food processors. And then you really had to do it by hand. So the food processor works just fine as well if you don't have the stick blender. But the stick blender, if you like pureed soups, is really worth the investment. It's, like $20. It's not a big investment at all, and I bet you can even find it online for cheaper. So that's really great for making any type of bean soups, anytime you want to puree anything. So I love those. So then you want to return the soup to the pot and heat it up. You can add the maple syrup, the coconut milk, and the Chinese five spice. And let it simmer for about another 10 minutes till everything comes together. You can adjust the seasonings, add more salt or pepper if you'd like. And voila, that is it. It couldn't be easier. It's all in one pot. You can serve it with some toasted whole grain bread and... that's a great, great dinner. So this recipe will be posted on the Progressive Radio Network by tomorrow. So if you didn't catch it and I was talking too fast, please find it on the website. So now I get to introduce my guest to you, which is Dr. Susan Rubin. As I said before, she used to be a dentist, but now she is a holistic nutritionist and founder of Better School Food, which is a coalition of health professionals, educators, and concerned parents, whose mission is to raise awareness about the connection between better food and better health. She's also one of the two angry moms in the documentary Two Angry Moms. So welcome, Susan.
Hi, Bhavani. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too. It's been a couple weeks, almost a month.
Yeah,
right?
Last time I saw you, we were in Italy together.
Yes. Well, Susan and I got to go to Terra Madre, which is the International Slow Food Conference in Torino, Italy. And we really had a great time together. Being that we both are interested in school food and working with kids, we found ourselves in most of the same lectures, yeah. So we really got to know each other.
Yeah, Terra Madre is this amazing event that happens every 2 years. And this year there were 160 countries represented. Bhavani and I were 2 of, I think, 600 delegates coming from the U.S. And really what Terra Madre was a blend of, the Olympics and Woodstock all wrapped around food. It was just fabulous. But there were a lot of wonderful workshops about school food, particularly in the European Union. But we learned a lot about, you know, other cultures and what they're dealing with to build a better food system.
Yeah, it was an amazing time. And one of the people that stood out to me was when we were at the conference or the workshop for school cafeterias. And we met, there was this little fireball there, Jackie Schneider, I believe her name was, right? And you said she's your England counterpart?
She's my England counterpart. I actually found her years ago on a Google search when I was starting up Better School Food. You know, I wanted to see what domain names were out there. And sure enough, there was Merton Parents for Better School Food. And there she was in the UK. And so at the Terra Madre event, Jackie delivered, like you said, she's a fireball.
Yeah.
And really passionate presentation from the parents' perspective about, you know, how we should be addressing this crisis in declining children's health.
Yeah. I mean, what I really loved was, you know, we were hearing a lot of presentations before, and it was PowerPoint, and it was very sedate. You know, and she got up there, and she was just like, did we do it because it's better for the environment? No! Did we do it because it was better for the farmers? No! Why do we do it? Because it's disgusting what they have there. And she was just so passionate. It was really...
And, you know, it's somehow, to me, it's, like, easier to yell like that when you have this lovely British accent, because it's just, like, it just comes out, like, the food is bloody awful.
Right, you know? Right.
It makes it great, but it really got everyone in that room to really sit up and pay attention, so it was fabulous.
Right, it really was. And her points were so perfect, because as a parent, why do we care about the food in our kids' school? It's not because of the environmental issues. We worry about that at home. It's not because, you know, the farmer needs to support themselves. It's none of these environmental, ecological reasons. I mean, all those are real. But the real reason is because the food that our kids are eating at school is bloody awful. And it is disgusting.
And as parents, our number one concern is the well-being of our kid. And, you know, once that starts to get addressed, then we start to look out into all the interconnectedness of all of these other issues.
Right, right.
And so it doesn't start. It starts with that angry mama bear, dare I say,
right.
Energy that we have, that we don't want our kids in harm's way. And unfortunately, right now here in the U.S., you know, our kids are in a toxic food environment when they go to school, even if you're brown bagging it.
It's so true, because just because you're brown bagging it doesn't mean that's what your child's eating. They have so much temptation there in front of them. I mean, even if they just go and get the French fries, you know, and mind you, the French fries, not only are they deep fried, but they're, you know, deep fried with everything else that was deep fried before it, you know, so it tastes like chicken or something else that was fried in there. So... and also, most of the schools don't even have proper cooking facilities anymore. They've gotten rid of them. They just have pizza ovens.
That's right. It's reheat and eat nowadays. But, you know, with all of the different initiatives that we've seen through the USDA and, you know, Michelle Obama's Let's Move initiative, I firmly believe that slow food really has this right approach. And there are many, many slow food in school initiatives across the country. And really what the main principles of slow food are is food that's good, clean, and fair. And so there's a lot of programs, school gardens, after-school cooking classes, you know, food tasting events. We saw a lovely thing at Terra Madre, which was a whole, and we got CDs about taste and how to develop a palate. And talking about different things than the food pyramid, which is pretty useless.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of education for a child is really, as you said, useless. I mean, they don't want to hear about all the specifics of this many servings, that many servings. You know, one of the things I very often say in my slow food and school workshops is eat like a rainbow. You know, eat the different colors, and then you're sure to get everything your body needs. And also presentation is so important. That's one of the things most striking for me, and I invite all parents to go to your child's school for lunch. Go with a friend. Go check out the cafeteria.
As a matter of fact, slowfoodusa.org just put out a thing today on their blog saying just that. Go to your cafeteria, take a photo of the food, and send it to slowfoodusa.org, and they will start to upload them. Because really, a picture tells a thousand words, and, you know, what you're going to see is pretty scary. It's like what I call the white diet. You know, you got your chicken nuggets, you got your fries, and there are no colors.
Right, right. Or the colors are so washed out that you don't want to eat them.
Yeah, because if you're at home and you're just reading a menu, that does not tell the real story. And so we really do need to go in and eat lunch at our school. And you know what? Invite your principal to have lunch with you as well, because chances are your principal hasn't really been to the cafeteria to eat. He or she is very busy doing other things, but we need to get them eating that food too.
Yeah. Well, I actually have had schools contact me for my business, for IE Green, to help develop a separate menu for the teachers, because the teachers don't want to eat in the cafeteria. And I really was conflicted because, you know, of course, you know, I want to do the job, but at the same time, I want to help the school, the kids' menu, not just the teacher's menu. And, I frankly believe that the teachers should be eating with the children in the cafeteria. It will help with bullying. It will help with kids wanting to eat more. It will help set the tone and the energy and the vibration in the cafeteria. Because if you've ever gone into those cafeterias, it's hard to think that anyone could digest anything there.
It's nuts. And you know what that would also build is team building. Because when you eat at home as a family at the dinner table, you're creating connections, okay? And you're also eating the same food. If you think about ancient times, okay, the Native Americans, they may have, you know, gotten a buffalo, and they all ate the same food. And when you eat the same food, it's that vibrational piece that you were just talking mm-hmm. about. There should not be children's food and teacher's food, or kids' meals and grown-up meals. That's part of this disconnect that we have to heal.
Right. Well, if you ever go to a restaurant, all the children's meals are unhealthy. You know, they're really unhealthy. I mean, I remember the first time my daughter went out to a restaurant with a friend, you know, and I guess she hadn't been to a restaurant because I did most of the cooking, and she looked at the menu, and there was nothing that she could eat in the children's menu, and she ordered a lobster. I don't think she was ever invited out with that family again, but, you know, she just didn't know from children's menu.
Right.
Had no idea. But one of the things that I found most horrifying when I went to the cafeteria was the fact that there were no plates. This might come as a shock to most of you, but if you can believe that it's like a slop kitchen. They actually put the food, they put the spaghetti, you know, saucy spaghetti, directly onto the tray. And the trays have compartments so you're not even eating on a plate. It's like an animal. You know, they put the spaghetti on the right onto the tray, along with the milk, along with the, I mean, it's unbelievable. I felt like it was the Oliver movie, you know, and just like, can I, please, sir, may I have another scoop? You know, it was horrible.
Well, there's other schools that are serving entirely on styrofoam. And, you know, another great example is there's a anonymous teacher somewhere out in the Midwest. Her name is Mrs. Q. And she's been eating school lunch every day since January 2010. And every day she takes her phone that has a camera in it. She takes photos of it. And so what you see on her plate is like four different packages. And when she's done eating, she'll take a photo of the empty packages. And I think about all of this waste because, you know, yes, there's this thing we have to consider about what our kids are putting in their mouths. But also there's the other end of this, which is all this waste, food waste, packaging. And, you know, so there's a whole circle. But I think that there's a huge opportunity for schools to step up and integrate all of this into their curriculum and into their education. You know, garbage, there is no away. You don't throw something away. It goes somewhere. Is it incinerated? Is it put in a landfill? This is a great social studies or science project for kids to know in their community, where is that garbage going?
Right, right. Yeah, away, like you said, there is no such thing as away. And I was talking to people about that a few weeks ago talking about, actually it was last week, talking about water bottles. You know, that's my pet peeve. You know, I just can't handle the amount of water bottle consumption in this country. And a lot of the farm-to-table restaurants are starting to stop serving bottled water. One of my favorite new little toys that I bought is a seltzer maker, yeah, you know, that comes in a glass bottle, because I was really conflicted. You know, I do like to drink sparkling water at times. And, you know, the only good sparkling water is imported. You know, and I didn't want to keep supporting the imported water. Yet at the same time, I didn't want to have to drink seltzer water that I didn't know where it was coming from, and it's in a plastic bottle. I didn't know if it was heated up. Plus, I didn't want to deal with the plastic bottle.
Right, yeah.
So I invested in this seltzer maker, and I've been so happy with it.
I have that, too, because we're a seltzer family as well, and it's so easy. But back to the bottled water in school, I look at that beyond the waste issue and the questionable leaching of those plastic bottles. I also look at that as a social justice issue, because why is it that a kid has to pay to drink some water in school? I just think that's so wrong. I mean, it seems to me drinking fountains should be fully functional. If not, there should be pitchers of water
available
free of charge, because we all know that kids learn better when they're not dehydrated.
Right.
Okay, so this is not even, we don't even have to talk obesity. This is a learning. You want to score better on those tests? Hydrate these kids. And it's just abominable to me that we are charging kids for water. It's wrong.
Yeah, it's wrong. And at the same time, so many of these buildings are old that you have to look at the water fountains and see what kind of metals might be in the water.
Yeah.
Because we did that at our local elementary school, and they found that there was lead in the pipes. And so they closed down, instead of fixing the problem, because it was going to be too much money, they closed the water fountains. And so now the kids have no access to free water unless they go into the nurse's office. And, of course, the nurse's office is too busy, so they don't want them in there. And so a child has to buy the bottle.
You know, there's a school district up by me that the environmental committee got a grant. And what they did is they upgraded all the drinking fountains, checked that piping and everything, and good filtration. And then what they did is they sold, you know, clean canteens as fundraisers, created a whole social marketing campaign with the kids to get, you know, get them back to the drinking fountain, take back the tap. And so, you know, once again, all of these things are easily integrated into a learning activity.
Well, you know, when I took over the cafeteria at the Waldorf School in Garden City, I was, you know, a certified teacher, and I did not want to go backwards, you know, into catering, which is what I had done for many years prior. So I said I would do the cafeteria only if it could be a extended classroom, only if the cafeteria was a springboard for other opportunities for education. And that's how I used it, you know. And so, you know, I had kids coming through the cafeteria for all kinds of learning opportunities, whether it was young kids doing baking and learning measurements. I mean, I had Girl Scouts at my house a few weeks ago, and they didn't know the measurements. They didn't have any idea how many tablespoons equals a cup and those kind of things. And those used to be basic things that were taught in the elementary school grades. And now, you know, I don't know if they just skip it. It's not on testing or, you know, what have you. But, you know, it wasn't known. So baking, the simple act of baking, is a great opportunity for learning
measurements,
chemistry. Math. Right.
Yeah. You know, there's a new curriculum that just came out a couple weeks
ago. I saw
that.
Thank you.
Called Nourish. And it's put out in part with the Center for Eco-Literacy. And there's six classes, and they can be standalone or they can be integrated into existing curriculum, or a Girl Scout leader could do it. And they're wonderful with things like media literacy, things like using Google Earth to look from outer space to see, you know, factory farms and look at the watershed around it. So there's so many ways that we can raise the food IQ of kids, that we can help to build a better food system that's good, clean, and fair, and also get better food in our schools.
Yeah, so important. So we're going to come back in a few minutes and discuss that more. But meanwhile, we're going to take a few-minute break. See you in a few.
I am are listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
I'm Gary Knoll. I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one form that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
Every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, join the founders of the Godspeed Institute for Spiritual Learning, Carol and Michael Hallenbeck, for Godspeed, an enlightening and informative journey into the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. Through conversations with experts worldwide, this weekly live call-in program is an on-air classroom aimed at helping listeners gain exposure to and insight into religious and spiritual practices around the world. Every Sunday, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, you're listening to Bhavani, and I'd like to welcome you every Wednesday on the Progressive Radio Network to join me for my show called I Eat Green, where every Wednesday we will talk about eating healthy and eating sustainably for our planet. So join me every Wednesday from 5 to 6.
Hi, this is Karen Hartglass, host of It's All About Food on the Progressive Radio Network. Please join me every Wednesday at 3 p.m. when we talk about the power of the fork, how our food choices affect our health, the environment, and the treatment of animals. Learn how a plant-based diet of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, nuts, and seeds is not only delicious, but gentle on the planet.
This is John Rappaport inviting you to my new radio show on the Progressive Radio Network, which will air every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm an investigative reporter. I've spent 20 years researching health and medical fraud, deep politics. I'll have lots of very knowledgeable guests on the show who have information to share with you so that you can live a more healthy and informed life. Join me every Wednesday on PRN. That's 7 p.m. Eastern Time, the John Rappaport Show. See you then.
You are listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green, and my guest today is Susan Rubin, and she is the founder of Better School Food and is one of the angry moms in the documentary Two Angry Moms. So I'm here with her, and we were on break. Is it working?
Yeah.
Okay, we were on break for a few minutes, and we were talking about what we really wanted to share with all of you that are listening, and we came back, and one of the things that I really came back with, if you remember my session last week with all of you, is the need for us all to become activists and how easy it is for us all to kind of sit back and listen to all this beautiful stuff about how it could be, but know that to get there, we all have to do our part. And so I think that's what Tara Madre did for me, and I think it did for you too, Susan. Am I correct?
Oh, my gosh. You know, what I realized, number one, is the diversity and the extent of all these people working all over the world to build a better food system and to build a better planet. I mean, I never realized what an environmentally based organization Slow Food was until I saw what was going on there.
Right. And you realize more than ever how connected food is to all of the problems that we're dealing with in our world, whether
Absolutely.
It's the environment, the economy, the health issues. And we also need to realize that the cheap food is not really cheap, that there's all these other costs that are subsidized by the government that we're really all paying for. In the long run.
You bet. We're paid. The other thing that your listeners might not know is that the story of how Slow Food ever started by an activist, I guess you could say. His name was Carlo Petrini, and he was an Italian. And there was a McDonald's that had been built at the foot of the Spanish Steps in Rome. And he set up an event where farmers and all sorts of people came holding bowls of penne pasta to protest this fast food
icon coming to Rome.
And the whole point was, you know, that we needed to make a statement against fast food and fast life. And so it was, you know, there's this other piece that's really cool about Slow Food, and that's the pleasure piece. So it's, you know, it sounds like we're activists and it's, well, we should do this and we got to do that. But you know what? There's this other piece there about, hey, you know, let's really appreciate and enjoy this food. And I know Bhavani and I had a blast at Terra Madre walking around and just tasting all.
There was a whole convention, a whole separate from where Terra Madre took place, next door in one of the Olympic convention centers. There was a whole five rooms, twice the size of Jacob Javits Center, filled with all these artisanal purveyors. You know, whether it was cheese, chocolate, balsamic vinegar, olive oil. Rooms and rooms filled with wine, beer, everything that was made by local people with quality and taste in mind.
And so the other thing I learned when I got to the Salone and Terra Madre was this idea of Presidia. And what a Presidia is it's a food community that is potentially in danger. Just like your dodo bird and saber-toothed tiger, food can be an endangered species. And so what these Presidia do, there's food communities to support that bean or that sheep or whatever.
Or apples we saw.
Or apples. Mm. And so, like I said, it really gave me this different understanding that what an environmental organization Slow Food is.
Yeah, we have to protect all the different species. And, you know, I have shared with my listeners that when, you know, the pilgrims first came to America, there were 200 different species of turkey. And now there's butterball. And that's why, you know, there's these heritage birds, you know, people that are raising turkeys. And personally, I'm a vegetarian. I don't eat it. However, if someone is going to eat meat, and the reason I became a vegetarian wasn't because I didn't like meat. It was because, you know, when I was 16, I read Diet for a Small Planet. You know, it spelled out the fact that we could grow enough food and that we do grow enough food and that if people just ate the food we grew instead of growing food for animals, we wouldn't have starving people on the planet. So it was just very simple and basic, and that's why I became a vegetarian. Right. But if you are going to eat meat and realistically, I know that I'm never going to get everybody to stop eating meat. So if you're going to eat meat, at least support the local farmers that are trying to protect the endangered species. And the way you protect them is by bringing them back. And you can only bring them back if there's a market for it.
Right. So there's also that fair piece and raising these animals compassionately.
Absolutely.
And properly. And I will note that Diet for a Small Planet, Anna LaPay's daughter.
No, Frances Morlath's daughter is Anna LaPay.
Anna
right.
LaPay now recently wrote a book called Diet for a Hot Planet. And this was another piece that was really addressed at Terra Madre is not just climate change, but the fact that our food system, our industrial food system as it exists right now, is a big, huge polluter to the air and the water. And so to go back to these slower, smaller, more resilient, more diversified, more local food systems, we are going to be better off.
Right. And a lot of times people say that when you're trying to raise food for so many people, you can't do it in the small way. And so what we have to do is all eat less of it, because we can raise enough if you eat less of it. And in traditional cultures, they didn't eat the quantity and the volume of the meat that we eat.
I found that just going to Italy and drinking coffee. I got off the plane at Milan Airport, and I went and had my first cappuccino in Italy. And they didn't have any paper cups. They only had ceramic little cups. And you had to stand at the bar and drink your coffee. Nobody was walking around with a grande, whatever, paper cup. You stopped. You took a couple of breaths, you took your few sips of cappuccino, and then you went on.
Right.
And so it's that piece, too, that's just so, I mean, this the consumption we have here in America, it's because we're mindless. We're not paying attention. We're not with our food. We're running across the street.
Right, the zen of eating.
Yeah.
The zen of eating. And when you do that, you also taste the food so much differently. And you were talking about the taste, when you slow down, you actually have time to taste the food. And if you try, I remember when, years ago when I was studying macrobiotics, they say take a bite and put your fork down and chew it 100 times. That's 100 times, 1,000 times. Chew it a lot, whatever. And it made a big difference. You really tasted it and you took that time. And it's a big difference. And that also affects weight.
Absolutely.
Loss. If you eat slower, I know for myself, because I've always struggled with weight, and it's not because I'm eating the wrong foods. I'm just, sometimes myself, I'm eating fast because it tastes so good, and I just want to, get to it, and then I'm finished, and people are still eating, so I have seconds, and that's the piece that we need to work on, because as Michael Pollan says, eat lots of vegetables. Plenty of them and not too much.
I have a little interesting food meditation that I do with kids and with grown-ups, and based a little bit in macrobiotics. I start out with a raisin, and I have everybody hold the raisin in their hand. It's kind of like a Buddhist mindful meditation. We look at the raisin, and then we slowly eat it. And when you just put one raisin in your mouth, it kind of swells up like a grape. It's very, very flavorful when you bite into it. The next thing I have everybody eat is a spoonful of well-cooked short grain brown rice. And once again, I have them look at it, and then I have them put it in their mouth and count the chews. And I talk about in macrobiotics and the Zen Buddhist monks who every mouthful is 75 chews, and I have them count their chews. And so by now, the energy in the room has shifted. Mm-hmm. And so kids will tell me, I got 20 chews. And so the next spoonful, I say, okay. We have them close their eyes again. And I encourage them to slow down even further and double that. Okay, so now the energy in the room has shifted. And I'm walking them through it. I'm telling them, feel the molar crush the grain of rice. And the rice tastes sweet because you've slowed down enough that the salivary amylase is breaking it down in your mouth. So then after that, the next food I give them is a Cool Ranch Dorito. So now I've trained their palate, okay, to pay attention and taste, and I've slowed them down enough. But a Cool Ranch Dorito is not meant to be eaten slowly and mindfully at all. And oftentimes it's the last Cool Ranch Dorito people ever eat.
Really?
Because it falls apart in your mouth and it tastes disgusting. And, of course, I don't have any water around, so usually people will go back for another spoonful of rice to clear their palate. And we talk about how the flavor of the rice and the raisin slowly develops versus that Cool Ranch Dorito, which is boom, boom.
Right,
so,
right.
Great experiment. Try it at home.
I love that idea. Yeah. I love that idea. So one of the things that Slow Food's really been doing, and I know both Susan and I are very involved in this, are Slow Food in School programs. And what we do is we go into schools, depending on the age group, we design a lesson to incorporate the educational piece and the experiential piece into the lesson plan. So why don't you share with us some of the work you've been doing with Slow Food in schools.
Okay. Well, I've actually been working with Slow Food USA to really take a look at all of the Slow Food in Schools programming going on throughout the country. And just like the Slow Food chapters, I believe we have about 200 or 220 of them, there's lots of diversity in this. For instance, Slow Food Denver, they have rolled out gardens in, 20, 30 schools, a lot. Okay, Slow Food Charleston, South Carolina just utilized that Nourish curriculum I was talking about. There's a Slow Food group in New Jersey that created a garden curriculum, a 20-page booklet. So every group, Slow Food Sarasota, Florida, they did a screening of ingredients, which is another movie about, you guessed it, ingredients. So there's lots of diversity, and we're going to be, in the year to come, we're going to be really highlighting these programs and really making it so that all chapters can utilize. We're going to share best practices because Slow Food USA president Josh Fertel, he has a little mission in his mind. He wants to see more school gardens than McDonald's.
Oh, can you imagine?
Isn't that a great goal to have? And I think we can do it. But to me, school gardens is the way that kids are going to fall in love with vegetables. And it's slow. But it's a really wonderful, not to mention it can be easily connected into science curriculum, social studies, math, you name it.
And team building, like you mentioned earlier.
Yes.
I find when I get kids out into the garden, there's real teamwork. There's not so much like, this is my seed and that's your seed. They kind of just, without saying anything, they work together. And the same peacefulness that you talked about that happens in the classroom, I find happens in the garden. And they just become very focused on the work. And I've loved it. I love seeing kids in the garden. And I think the idea of having a garden in every school is phenomenal.
Yeah. And, our kids are suffering from nature deficit disorder anyway. So we really need to get them outside, and we need to get their feet in soil, not pavement. And these things, because we're inside too much. We're in front of too many screens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this disconnect that we have to heal, because nobody is going to eat food because it's good for you or it's on the food pyramid. I mean, 70% of Americans don't even know what the heck the food pyramid says or is about anyway.
I read the whole history about the food pyramid. It was very interesting when there were many other type of ways of getting that message across that were more productive, that were more, that were better. But because it was either the meat people didn't like how small they looked on the little diagram, or the dairy people didn't like how small they looked. And it was a real fight between the different, lobbying groups. And the pyramid was kind of the compromise.
Well,
but it's not really even that accurate. I mean,
no,
they
crazy.
Know it's not really the best.
It's not a memorable metaphor. People don't live in pyramids. They live in houses. And I actually created my own system I got trademarked called the House of Health. And it's a teachable piece that can go from kindergarten all the way up. And food is the foundation. Because if you think of the three little pigs, right? That little pig that built his house out of straw, it might have looked good for a while, but ultimately it blew down. And that's what happens if you eat poor quality food. Your framework, your foundation is weak. And sugar acts like termites. It weakens that foundation. So that's really one of the pieces. But the other piece is the other non-food activities that nourish us that are really important, like sleep. This time of year, November, December, we need more sleep because it's darker out. All of nature is sleeping more, except for us. We're going to holiday parties. And then in January, we're all sick. So it's like this disconnect from nature with all the lights. And so we really need to kind of recreate that and recapture that.
Very interesting. When we were talking about activists, we all need to become those activists. Right now, there are some things I'd like to ask all of you to do, okay? The Child Nutrition Act is up for reauthorization. And for those that do not know, this piece of legislation is what decides on how much money is allocated for our children's school lunch program. And we need more money. And that it keeps coming down to the money. Every time, parents try to find out why they can't have better food, it always comes down to the money. And we as slow food members were and slow food activists, we were trying to get a dollar additional added to the school lunch program. Well, it ain't going to happen. So right now we're fighting over the 6 cents that they're giving us, 6 cents per child additional. But we'll take it. It's better than nothing. So we need all of you to call your senators and congressmen and let them know that you care about the Child Nutrition Act.
I would recommend that you put your senator and your congresspeople's phone number on your speed dial in your phone. Because I got to tell you, it's really fun to call them up when there's an issue like this Child Nutrition Act. And you're going to feel better when you're actually taking a stand. And it's not hard. It only takes a minute. And you just call. They register that you called. You talk to somebody. Those phone calls count. They count more than an email signature on a petition.
Absolutely. And there's another issue that's up right now, and that's the food safety bill. And what's happening is the food safety bill, while it, parts of it is definitely good legislation for helping protect all of us against some of the agribusiness production that's going on out there, but it's not fair to the small farmers because, you know, what a large feedlot needs to do and be careful about is different than what a small local farmer needs to do. So we're asking all of you to call your congressmen and senators about this. And it's the farm bill, and you want to ask them to support the farm bill, but make sure that they support
food safety bill.
I'm sorry, the food safety bill, but make sure they support the Tester-Hagen Amendment and also the manager's amendment. Those are two both very important pieces. As a New Yorker, I know Senator Gillibrand's office, she's very supportive of this bill and of the manager's amendment, but she needs to hear from all of us that we also want her to support the Tester-Hagen amendment. And that is what will make this bill fair for your local farmers as well. And, you know, it really will affect the farmers that come down to the local farmers markets. And if this passes without that piece, it really is going to make it almost impossible for the farmers to continue doing the work they're doing.
And as I said before, by being local and being active nationally, okay, because democracy is not a spectator sport. We don't just vote every 2 or 4 years and that's it, and then we can sit around and complain. We need to use our voice every day, and either that's local, right, in your community, or that's picking up the phone. But one of the wonderful things I love about Slow Food is that we have both of those pieces. And so, you know, we have people at Slow Food USA that, you know, via email send us this information. So we really understand, okay, what do we need to do now and how our voices can
right, and we can get
really
that
work.
Information out to you.
Exactly.
I recommend all of you join Slow Food if you're not a member already. Slow Food USA was doing a sale to try to bring in more members, but they realized that because they got so many new members that it's more important to get everybody on board than charge a lot for membership. So now it's only $25 to become a member. It's not a very, it's not a sale price, it's the price. So it's $25 to become a member. Slowfoodusa.org is the website. You can join there. And you can do a search to find out what your local chapter is if you do not know. But it's a wonderful, wonderful organization, and they will keep you abreast of all the issues that you need to be working about.
And one of the things that Slow Food USA is also looking ahead in the future, and that is the Farm Bill. And while we talked about the Child Nutrition Act and how that impacts school lunch, well, this Farm Bill impacts school lunch, and it impacts everything you eat. The Farm Bill is the reason that a Happy Meal costs a lot less than a healthy meal. And we have to change that because that ain't right.
Right. And so each of us has to take on this responsibility to get the information ourselves. And in this day and age with computers, it's so easy. But we can't all sit back and know that other people are going to take care of it. We all have to participate in making this happen.
We are the people we've been waiting for.
Right. So I invite all of you to pick up the phone, get active, join a local organization that you can feel passionate about, whether it's Slow Food USA, whether it's Sustainable Long Island, whether it's Holistic Moms, whether it's Better School Food, whatever organization you've heard about, join one that you can feel passionate about. And it is also a wonderful way to build community. You meet others that care about this in your local community. When Susan just talked about, you know, a democracy, well, when I heard that only 30% of our population voted this last time,
oh my God,
30%. You know, and yet we all want to complain that, you know, all these Republicans got into office. I mean, you know, we have to all participate in this democracy or it's not going to work.
Absolutely. And the other thing I will say about building community is it's really healing. I mean, I work with cancer survivors, and one of the things that has been shown with research is that when they're in support groups, they live longer.
Yeah.
And it's the same for us to have a community of like-minded people that you're building through events and movie screenings and gardens. It's good for your spirit. It's food for your soul. So I encourage you, join Slow Food USA. If there's not a chapter around you, start a chapter. We can help
you
do it.
There you go. Start a chapter. Susan, why don't you give your email address?
Oh, sure.
So if somebody needs to get in touch with you for something, and then I'll give mine.
Okay. My email is drsusanrubin@gmail.com. That's drsusanrubin@gmail.com. I have betterschoolfood.org. I also have drsusanrubin.com.
Great. And I am Bhavani@iegreen.com. So all of this information will be on the website tomorrow. So you can download any of it and spread it around. Let's all get active together. God bless.